Welcome to another edition of the Home Improvement Show. Your chance to ask Walter Assey, president of Renofco, all of your home improvement questions. Did you start a project? You shouldn't have. Did you start it and you don't know how to finish it? Well, he is here. He is taking your questions, your calls, and your text messages. 514-790-0800. That is the same number for the phone and for the text line. Hello, Walter. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Listen, you came in. I'm doing well. You came in here and you said, wait, I had a hip surgery, if you didn't know. And you said, where is your cane? And I left it in the car.
Look at you, adventurous.
I am Usain Bolt. No, I'm kidding. I am still walking very slowly. I'm not running, but you know, I'm getting there. I'm a work in progress, much like the different homes of the people.
I mean, I saw you last week. You had this bounce in your step. And
like, he lies. He lies. Listen, the phone calls are already starting to come in. 514-790-0800. But you did at some point wanted to talk to us about an experience you had this week, right? You had a customer with an older home.
That is correct. So it's actually, it's very common that we see this, especially in older homes. So when you go into a home that is 60s, 50s, older homes, 70s, and, you know, most of the time the homeowner is focused on the design and the cosmetic element of things, which is great. Specifically, if you go to a home that is still original, like, you know, this particular home, it still have the old ceramic, have the old original kitchen from the 60s. So these are all telltale signs for a good contractor to look beyond that, right? So, you know, we were looking at the cosmetic stuff, but then, you know, red flags started to come out. The electrical looks old. The plumbing is cast iron. So, you know, before venturing into this big renovation that the homeowner is doing, just you have to look under the hood.
Otherwise, it's a patch job. And we'll be talking about that throughout the show because this person... You investigated and discovered a bunch of things, but the calls are exploding. You're so popular, Walter. You know that? All right. Who's been waiting longest? Ken. Ken is on the line, and Ken has a question about a back water valve. Ken, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Take it away.
Thank you. So I have a tenant in a basement unit of an apartment, and they get intermittent sewer smells in their kitchen. So my first thought was to put a backwater valve, I'll say, as close to the wall as possible. Like, does that make sense? What should I be thinking of?
Well, I mean, there's many things. Number one, this is a basement apartment, so there is a floor and a subfloor, I presume, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you check if, and that's, again, very common, did you check if there was a floor drain in that area?
No, so in that area where the kitchen drains for even the two tenants above, the main valve is like, you know, probably a 6-inch metal pipe was replaced probably 8 years ago. So okay, like the floor was dug up, the valve was changed, everything was cleaned out.
Okay, so there's no floor drain under the floor that was condoned and you don't know about. Okay,
exactly.
So that's a good start.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, you do have a siphon P-trap underneath, right? Okay, so it's not a straight line. Okay, so that's number two on the checklist.
And the other thing is, though, like right now, like I'll say there's like a very minimum slope from the sink to the wall where it drains. So I'm thinking also that, like, maybe I need to elevate that a bit too, like where it's right at the sink to get a better better slope.
Okay, that's fine. I don't think this will be more related to the smell though. What I want to ask you is, was this apartment not rented for a while?
So that's the other thing. I did have a tenant there who wasn't there very often.
Okay, so that's your problem. What I'm going to give you is one solution that might work without you having to spend all this money for no reason.
Okay.
Just get mineral oil and dump it in the drain.
Okay.
Okay. The issue is, you know, when you have when you have any plumbing fixture that does not get used often, the water in the P trap disappears, so the sewer smells tend to kind of make their way up very quickly, right? Okay. So what you're going to do is, instead of putting water, because if you do water and you don't live there, you have to do it like every couple of
years. But now there is a tenant, right?
So, yeah. So even with that, put some oil in the P trap.
Okay.
And then from there, what you're gonna start monitoring the smell, and you're gonna see it will start going down more and more and more.
Oh, very good.
Okay. Now that there's a tenant, they're gonna use it more often, so that's gonna help. But probably what they inherited the older habits of the old tenant, and that's why the smell is still there. But you don't need. I would not install anything right now before I try that.
Okay, sounds good. Another quick question.
Yeah.
I miraculously lost half the flashing on the front of the building on the roof. So where do I go to find somebody who's going to do a half a facade repair?
You're gonna...
with a new piece of flashing. I know.
Your problem is not where you're going to find. The problem is such a small job.
Exactly.
You know, contractors either they're gonna be interested or they're gonna charge you some crazy prices.
Yeah.
Your best bet is if you have a crew next to you working on the roof, is to go and get them and tell them I'm just close by, and you give the guy a nice tip or something. Honestly, anything else, you call a company, and I don't blame them. Their season is so short, and especially now. You're not going to really have great luck.
Right.
So go see what the neighbors are doing,
just
Ken.
Try to get yourself a local guy around.
Yeah. So really quickly. So let's say I don't find somebody quickly and I leave it this way through the winter. Any real risk?
Exposed wood is always a real risk.
Understood.
Because the wood would rot.
Yeah. Okay. Even in one winter?
Even in one winter, because here's I'm going to give you the easier answer to this. Once wood gets to 23% relative humidity, the rot starts.
Okay.
So one winter, half a winter, one rainfall, 10 rainfalls. This is how you're going to start evaluating if you have issues with the wood.
The other
thing I'm going to give you, and that goes for everybody, typically like an exposed wood 2x4 roughing, 90 to 120 days is its life shelf exposed.
Okay.
And winter is longer than that.
Yes, sir. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you, Ken. And again, look around. Drive around the neighborhood. Maybe there's somebody that has...
Snatch a guy.
No, by all means, do not... We're not promoting kidnapping. But go and see what's going on, okay?
Snatch is more friendly.
Right? All right. Thank you for that, Ken. 514-790-0800. Lots of calls coming in. You can always text us as well. It's your time to ask Walter Assey, president of Vernovco, all of your questions for your home improvement needs. We're going to be taking all of your calls coming up in just a few moments. This is the Home Improvement Show. Welcome back to the Home Improvement Show. Your chance to ask Walter Assey, president of Vernovco, your most pressing questions on all your different projects. Maureen has been waiting very patiently on the line, and she's got a question about an outlet in her bathroom. Maureen, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
All right, take it away.
Okay. Hi. I have a house, and it's built in about 1950, and it never had a fan in the bathroom. And I noticed that I'm getting some mold on the tiles in the bathtub. And so I was hoping to have a fan installed, and I was just wondering, is that a big deal?
So the quick answer is yes and no. Okay. I'm just going to explain you what it entails, and then you're going to evaluate what's a big deal for you.
Okay.
Obviously you have to bring in the electrical because you don't have it right now. So that's important. The other thing is, it's not just to make a hole in the ceiling and put the fan.
Yeah.
That fan have to absolutely be exhausted to the outside.
Yes.
Whether it's through the roof, whether it's through the side of the home.
Yes.
That is a decision that have to be made with your contractor. Okay.
But what I noticed from other people who have it, they've done it in the side of the wall.
That inside of the wall, what does that mean? What do you mean?
When they went through the brick?
When they what? Sorry?
When they went through the brick.
Yeah.
That's where the vent seems to come out.
So they vented through the site.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's fine, but there's a big but there, and this is again something that gets overlooked often, and we see it often.
Okay.
Let's understand that when you do that, you have to evaluate how far is your register or your grill from your soffit, right? Because what happens is the fan is going to exhaust condensation to the outside, and your soffits are made to suck in air to ventilate your attic. So if it is too close to your soffit, what's going to happen is you're going to bring the condensation out, and it's going to be sucked through your soffit, and it might create mold in that particular area of the attic.
Yeah.
So the trick is, if that's the case, what you do is you block a small section of your soffit right above that register, about, let's say, a foot each side. Like if you calculate, for example, where your register is right now, about a foot each side should suffice. 1.5 feet is your minimum standard. And that will ensure that you don't have any back current going into your soffit. The other thing is you absolutely need to have an insulated duct.
Okay.
More importantly, is your duct have to be about 5 feet in length. Okay.
Yes.
If it's too much of a short distance, it can create condensation inside the pipe and leak back into your home.
Okay.
Right. So what they do is sometimes they loop it just to kind of, or they kind of make it snake around a little bit, just to kind of give it a bit more length before they bring it out. So that would be like the things to look for. Repairs wise, I mean, you're going to have openings in your ceiling. You're going to have to make a hole through your brick, and you're going to have electrician involved as well. So you're going to have plastermen, gibrock guys, plaster guys, and everything else. It's a small, big job. So that's where it gets to be dicey. Your electrician is not going to be able to do the plastering and the painting or the hole in the brick. So you have to have a couple of trades involved, 2 to 3 trades to get the job done. That's right. What gets dicey about it. My advice to you, if you have another job that you want to do, is kind of do a mix between the two. So have something else done at the same time, so you don't have to pay the premium just because you're getting all these guys in for such a small job.
Maureen, thank you so much for that call. I hope that helps you out.
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
Okay, we've got John who's been waiting on the line. John has a question about icicles. John, we're still in September. John, can you hear us?
Yes. We have a chronic case of icicles and ice damming, despite the fact that we've had the soffits cleared, stair vents put in, and R55 insulation. And we have a maxi vent. And we still get the ice damming. Any solutions?
Okay, so let me ask you, how about your pitch, like the slope on your roof? How?
It's a pretty severe pitch, yeah.
So it's a good pitch?
Yes. Yep.
All right. You're sure. It's a steep pitch, right? It's
not, yeah. Okay. I don't know in degrees, maybe 60 degrees or 45 degrees or something like that.
Okay. And you said you have R55 insulation.
Yes.
So when
it was blown in after the styro vents were applied, but I was told that the fellows that blow in the insulation, they're very careful about not blocking the styro vents.
We get told a lot of things, but that's not always the case. Okay. So, I mean, like the quick answer to you would be, this is very easily verifiable. What you're going to do is you're going to be sticking your head through the attic. You don't necessarily need to walk in the attic, because that's where it gets to be dicey. You stick your head in the attic.
Just stick your head. Remember.
Yeah, okay. But you stick it like deep enough to see around. Obviously, you pass the R55. R55 is a bit on the higher side. R50 would have been enough. You want to do a 360 around. So what you want to see is continuous sunlight on the perimeter of your roof.
Right.
The other indication is, and now it's a better time to kind of gauge it, is when you stick your head up in your attic, how cold is your hot or cold the attic is. The idea is you want the attic to be temperature-wise as close to the outside as possible. Right.
Okay. Yes.
So you know, in the winter, it have to be super cold. Okay. Have to,
right.
And you have to feel a draft.
Right.
If you don't feel that, then these are really your telltale signs of what's wrong. Chances are when they blew, because R55 is on the higher side, so that's a lot of insulation.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling when they blew, and they tell you they're careful. Every contractor says that. There's some areas that either moved with the wind and blocked certain areas of your soffit. So if it's intermittent, then that will create you ice damming.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, on the where you want to look at is on those particular areas where you have the icicles, because that's
it's the whole front and the whole back of the house.
Okay.
Interesting, we have an addition to the house,
mm-hmm.
which is more modern. This house is 1943, but the addition to the house is perfect. Like whoever, our contractor did it, and there's no ice on that part.
Okay.
It's the old part.
Let me ask you another crazy question. Do you have any ducting in your attic?
Yes, there is.
There you go.
Yeah.
Say there's no one... more, my friend. Say no more.
Okay. There's a duct coming up from the, yes, we have ducts going through from the basement, the bathroom, and I don't know if the family bathroom goes through the attic.
So you're talking the fans?
Yes.
I meant more like ventilation ducts.
Oh, no.
Okay. So one of the other things you want to look at as well, because what happens is we have to understand the process of how things are done, specifically when these guys come and they blow in the insulation, right? So a guy stops in one area and it's a big hose, and then he goes around and he shoots as much as possible. With time, if there's any draft or any people that did any work in the attic or even themselves just through, I don't know, he got a phone call and he forgot. Sometimes there are areas that, you know, they don't put enough,
mm-hmm.
they forget to put. And that's also a very strong possibility. Because if you do have the right pitch, it's very simple. You have the right ventilation. You have air circulation in your attic. You shouldn't be having any more icicles.
Right.
So there's probably either a heat leak somewhere. Pot lights, for example, that don't have the halogen pot lights with no boxes on top.
We don't have that.
Okay, so that's good. Or certain areas that they forgot to do, or certain areas in your soffit that are blocked. The good news for you, it takes about 20 minutes. You can inspect the whole attic, and then you're going to find the culprit right then and there.
But John and Walter, there's a texter writing in saying, can you recommend an attic company that can manage this? This person has ice buildup every year. So is there a company? Are you looking for what is an attic company?
Yeah, I would appreciate an attic inspector.
It's an attic inspector?
Well, I mean, technically, there's nothing such as the word attic inspector. What you want is an insulation company that comes, not the same guys, because they're going to try to, you know,
put things
under. Well, they got it wrong the first time. So
any insulation company that is in your area, you know, because, again, a lot of these guys, they work by area. So you get the guy to walk. They're very... You know, a good installation guy, honestly, does a real walk in your attic. That's pretty much what I can tell you. They really want to see every possible corner, specifically on those tight angles.
Right.
You know where you have those angles where the soffit meets the roof?
Yes.
That's where most of the mistakes happen because, yeah, they have in their work order R55,
mm-hmm.
Let's, you know, I think we should just break for news and I'll just continue my idea.
Yeah, stay on the line,
John. I'll hold.
Because I see the finger of Juan going.
Well, I have a little, we have hand signals. You know, we gotta take a little break, but we'll be right back. And this is the Home Improvement Show. All right, we are back on the Home Improvement Show. John is still waiting on the line. John had some icicles in the attic. And
not in the attic, no, on the roof.
On the roof, sorry. Yeah. And then and Walter told you to poke your head up there. And a lot of actually listeners have texted in about the same problem. Yep. Go on.
So what was I saying before the, were you paying attention?
Yes.
I was like, me or John?
John mentioned somehow the blown-in insulation may not be evenly applied, and that may have blocked some areas in the soffits with the insulation.
But we're also talking about inspectors,
so,
right?
So, I mean, a good installation guy would take a real walk and then really inspect every single thing. Because you usually on those tight spots and the tight corners, that's where you get in trouble.
Okay.
There's not enough gap for the R50 to put R50 in these areas. And a good installation guy would decrease the quantities in those particular areas because R50 might just block the gap of the ventilation.
Right.
Especially in these tight spots. Or they could recommend for you to urethane these particular areas instead of doing a fiberglass because they can get you R50 in these areas. So that's where you really, really want to focus the inspection.
One more thing, Walter. I forgot to mention that we have forced air heating and the two main ducts that go up into the second floor, I don't think it's sealed around the register, you know, some of that hot air from the heating ducts may be getting into the attic. Is that a possibility?
That is why I asked you that question before, because, you know, it is, I remember when I told you there is some type of a heat source that's kind of forcing itself through your attic.
Right.
When that happens, if you have snow on your roof, the snow melts a lot quicker.
Yes.
And then what happens is it goes all the way down and gets stuck where the gutters is, and that's why you have your icicles.
John, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you, Walter. It helps a lot. Thank you.
All right. We've got lots of people waiting very, very patiently, and I see you, and we're going to get to all of you. Ron is on the line. He's been waiting for quite some time. Ron has a question about his walls cracking in the basement. Ron, take it away.
Hi. Yeah, I'm watching TV in my basement, okay? And a lot of times I've been hearing, like, downstairs, I have the door to go to the garage. I have a double garage and a bathroom also. So I'm hearing cracking, the wood's cracking or whatever, but I don't see any damage. And I do not want to take anything apart. I've been here 38 years, so.
Okay, so you're hearing wood cracking in the
basement? Well, whatever, making noises, you know?
Okay, so one of the things you want to do is to first look at your relative humidity levels in the basement.
Yeah,
that's, you know, wood is a life matter, so it expands and it contracts.
Okay.
One of the primary reasons for it is usually a lack of, a lack of humidity or too much humidity, right?
Okay, I have a dehumidifier in my bathroom going all the time.
Okay, but that might not be enough if it's just in the bathroom.
Yeah.
What you want to do is you can invest in a hygrometer, and you know they're not expensive. You know, buy one Canadian Tire for like $20, and that will give you what the relative humidity is. You want your basement to be between 50% and 55% relative humidity in all time. That's summer and winter. So in the summer you want to dehumidify. In the winter you might have to humidify. Might depending on how dry your basement gets.
Okay.
So before you do anything drastic, that's what you start with, because that's 90% of the time that is the culprit. But having said that, that might not also be the only thing. Another, another thing that could fall in 10% of a possibility is some type of a structure that is not adequately anchored. In a lot of cases, we've seen, for example, support columns that have no footing underneath, and they're starting to sag a little bit.
Yeah, well, my basement's fully closed in; it's all finished. And like I said, I lived here for 38 years.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a recent thing.
Yeah.
You
know? So sometimes with inadequate structure, it takes years to show. But I mean, the good news for you is that they're usually telltale signs. When you're upstairs, if you see that your floor is sagging, if you see there's cracks on the walls, horizontal, specifically horizontal cracks, or around door frames, that means you have some type of structural movement.
Yeah. So,
and that will kind of be an indicator for you to start investigating a bit the structure. If you don't see that, start with the hygrometer and try to normalize the humidity in your basement, and that should stop the noises.
Ron, thank you so much for your call.
Have a good day. Bye.
You too. Remo is on the line, and Remo's been waiting to ask a question about his kitchen cabinets. Remo, can you hear us?
Hi, yes.
Take it away.
Okay, Walter, I have a kitchen cabinet that's 25 years old, and I like your opinion on repainting the kitchen itself, the cabinets. How do you find it? Is it durable? Is it? Do you have any recommendations or your comments on painting the cabinets?
Okay, let's start with the obvious question. What type of material your cabinet is made of?
The facades are hardwood, and it's pretty good shape.
Okay.
But like wear and tear with the handles, you see the wood. And rather than redoing the whole kitchen, someone suggested just repaint the cabinets. Do you find it liable? Like, is it good?
So, yeah, to answer the question correctly is what you're trying to attain. If you're trying to kind of upgrade because you want the look to be more contemporary, more up to date to today's standards, and you have those, for example, doors that have arches on them, then, you're putting lipstick on a pig. It's going to give you a painted kitchen, but it's not going to give you a 2025 kitchen. Right. So that's the first thing you wanna look at is what are you trying to accomplish with that renovation? If you're telling me I just want to freshen things up, I really don't care about today's look, and that's another story. The reason I'm saying that is because to paint a kitchen or stain a kitchen professionally is not necessarily cheap, especially if you get a real pro to do it. Right. So there is an investment. It will be for sure cheaper than changing the whole kitchen.
Exactly.
But it's not going to necessarily in all the time get you to today's standards. So, for example, the older kitchens, you have those exposed hinges, and then you see the frame of the boxes around the door. And obviously, it's not that today's standards. Today's standard, the door covers the whole box.
Right.
And you don't see the hinges. So these particular kitchens, to be quite frank with you, I would not spend a dime on them. Because, there's no, you're going to spend thousands of dollars and it's not going to give you any return on investment when you sell the house, like zero, right?
True enough.
So, but if you're doing it because you say, I just want it to be fresh for the next 5 years, I don't care about resale and this and that, I'll tell you, okay, go ahead and do it. Good investment, not particularly, return on investment, zero. So these are the questions you have to answer.
Yeah, how much are you willing to spend even to get to have it
correct.
Painted?
Well, they say roughly it's could be like $10,000 for the whole job.
Correct.
Correct. And to redo a kitchen, then you're looking at $25,000, $35,000 to have new cabinets.
Correct. So here's the thing that I want you to kind of keep in mind, Remo. A kitchen renovation and a bathroom renovation, in a lot of cases, actually make you money when you sell the house. They don't make you... So it's not... If you think of it as an expenditure, you're 100% correct to think this way. But if you do it the right way, you're actually making money. So it's like a piggy bank when it comes to you renovating it and benefiting from that. So the $10,000 you're going to spend is out the drain. The $25,000 potential you're going to spend,
a return,
it's going to give you the return.
Remo, right. Thank you so much for that call.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, you're listening to the Home Improvement Show. Lots of calls coming in. We'll get to them in just a bit. Oh, we do have a good time here on the Home Improvement Show. Walter Assey is standing by taking your questions, your home improvement questions. Of course, Walter is the president of Renovco. Helen has been waiting very, very patiently, and I do appreciate that, Helen. She's got a question about squirrels and her roof, I think. Helen, can you hear us?
So the squirrel has been eating at the shed's roof.
Oof.
And they eat through, I mean, they eat through the shingles, they eat through the membrane, and they eat through the wood, the contreplaqué, I don't know what that is. So I have to replace it, of course, but they're just going to eat through it again. A metal roof is really expensive. So what do you suggest?
First, what the heck is your shingles made of?
Like they're
eating
shingles on my roof.
Acorns and walnuts.
Yes.
How delicious is your shingles?
I've not tried it.
Okay, that's actually rare. So
oh, is it? Well, you can have them.
It is because shingles, I mean, the newer shingles are made of fiberglass, so that might be less appetizing for your for the squirrels to eat. So what you probably have is the older shingles, which were based on of tar, goudron, like, and that is more chewy. And specifically, if you would have some plywood rot,
okay, possibly.
Right. So if you have plywood rot, possibly what they want to try to get to is the rot in the plywood, rather than the shingle or the plywood itself. What they try to do is in the winter they hide their nuts.
Yes, and they
usually
do.
Yeah, and they usually try to go to these attics, if you wish, or any structure that they can hide food in. By you replacing that rotten wood and putting the fiberglass shingle, so don't invest in a metal roof. It's an overkill. You're going to pay too much money for it.
Okay.
Go back with shingle. You don't need to tell the guy fiberglass based, because all the newer shingles are fiberglass based. So that's, you're not going to have a problem with that. But ensure that you do change all your rotten wood.
And ask for the least delicious shingles, honey.
Yeah, the ones.
thank
they're
you.
They're not eating, of course. They're just chewing on it because that's what they need to do.
Listen, good luck with that. Call us
thank
back.
You.
Let us know how it went. We have time for one last call here before we wrap things up. And I think it's Nydia. Am I saying that right? Nydia, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
All right, take it away.
Yes, hi. Okay, I plan to do my flat roof and change the insulation. After the insulation is installed, could this be a problem? You were talking about icicles, and do I have to make sure all the corners are well insulated? And he's using white rock. Is that?
Well, the good news for you is, do you live in a duplex or?
Yes, it's a
okay.
duplex.
So the good news for you, flat roofs are a lot less susceptible to icicles than shingle roofs, because you don't have a slope, and typically you would have like a parapet wall that kind of keeps the snow contained and doesn't slide off. So you don't necessarily have that issue. What you want to ensure is just adequate ventilation for other reasons, because you don't want to overheat your attic. That's the idea, and for the wood to breathe. So in your case, it's not going to be a question of icicles as much as it is, you know, wood needs to breathe. If it doesn't breathe, it will rot. And an overheated attic will drastically shorten the age of your roof.
Okay.
So that's pretty much the gist of it when it comes to insulation in your flat roof.
Oh, perfect.
How are you doing the insulation, if you don't mind me asking?
Pink bats. That's what's originally there, but I want to replace it.
But how are you doing it? From the bottom or from the top?
No, from the top.
So you're taking out all the plywood?
Yeah, that was the plan, yeah.
Okay, and did you guys check if you have vapor barrier? And because if it's an older structure, you might not have vapor barrier?
Paper barrier?
Yeah.
I don't know if I have paper. It's an 89 building. It's not
89 is great news. 89 is good. That means the vapor barrier technology was there, so that solved that problem. I was one more worried if it would have been 50s or 60s, because in those days the bat insulation came with paper, and the paper was considered a vapor barrier, which now we know it's not.
Okay, okay. And he wants to use white rocks, right? Is that an advantage too, like tar and gravel?
Well, it is. Okay, the white rock, I think it's not a choice anymore. A lot of municipalities are forcing that. So it is a great advantage because of the, you know, the biggest enemy for your tar roof is the sun.
Uh-huh.
And when you have white rock, it's actually less heat on your roof and makes more comfortable as well the inside of your home. Uh-huh. So it's an environmental thing.
Okay.
I'm not a big fan of tar and gravel in general. Because it's very hard to locate a problem if it leaks because of the gravel on top.
Uh-huh.
I'm more a fan of elastomeric roofs because, you know, number one, there's no gravel. It's less weight.
Yeah.
And then there's the problem. You can kind of zero in on it a lot easier than tar and gravel.
Oh, I see.
And you don't have to maintain it. You don't have to rake the gravel. You don't have to add gravel with time. So there's all these other things that come... That makes it a more practical choice.
Okay, but it's a cheaper choice too.
The tar and gravel is a cheaper choice, but I'm going to confuse you a little bit more. The problem with tar and gravel is how many plies you're going to get, right? And most homeowners are not up there with the roofers counting the plies.
No, you shouldn't be up there, I don't think.
Yeah, so, you know, the how many plies of tar you...
Like layers, basically.
How many layers,
yeah.
Correct.
Oh, okay.
Now, what happens is, you know, sometimes the roofer want to be too competitive, so he will give you, you know, 3 plies, and that would be the roof. But technically, the minimum standard, for as far as I'm concerned, should be 5 plies. So that's where you would have to, you know, kind of be a bit more attentive. And elastomeric roof, they can't play that game because it's just an elastomeric member.
Nydia, thank you so much for your call. Hope that helps. Thank you for all of your text messages and your calls. We didn't get to everything, of course, because everyone called in at the same time. We love that. That's okay. You can always head on over to the Renofco website and click on the Ask Walter button. And he does. He really works hard to get to all of your questions. That does it for us, Walter. Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming.
We'll chat again next Saturday.